Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are delighted to have with us Matthew Brodsky, a man whose intellect and knowledge about the Middle East in particular is much prized by us here at Secure Freedom Radio. He has been working on and writing about these subjects for quite some time, notably at the Jewish Policy Center, at Wikistrat, and elsewhere. He has been generous with his time to talk particularly about developments in Syria, about which he recently wrote, co-authored a piece in the National Interest, and I wanted to pick his brains about what seems to be the consolidation of power, if not outright victory, by Bashar Assad and his Iranian and Russian allies. Matt Brodsky, welcome back. It's so good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure.
So, Matt, tell us a little bit about the state of play on the ground at the moment. Is it fair to say that basically Assad and his friends are now in what amounts to sort of a mopping up operation against the last vestiges of organized opposition to the regime?
This will certainly be one of the last major battles that was in the cards for a long period as far as mopping up. However, this is going to be very large. So we're dealing with an area, the Idlib province in northwestern Syria, where you have about, say, 70,000 or so rebel fighters in a population that's incredibly dense. 3.5 million live there. And throughout the war, when Assad has retaken territory with his, of course, Russian and Iranian backers, he's then offered a form of reconciliation agreement, which gives rebels the opportunity to then be shipped away into what becomes the next battleground. So the final frontier has ended up being in Idlib. So this is where there's major friction points, a huge rebel pocket, and where many will make their last stand. And it's going to be, I'm afraid, incredibly bloody. We already know Russia has moved in some 10 naval, some warships, two submarines off the coast. So this is the largest buildup it has had since it got involved since September 2015. So the stage is really set and the offensives are underway right now.
And Matt, is it fair to say that the past practice of the Iranians and their Syrian proxies, as well as, of course, backed by the Russians, has been essentially to follow a scorched earth practice, to essentially devastate the areas that they're targeting, and then essentially push people who survive to go elsewhere? There's no place else for them to go at this point. So do you anticipate that we'll see once again this kind of mass destruction and then the simple elimination of those who survive since there will be no place further for them to flee?
I'm afraid I do. Russia absolutely has been targeting hospitals. They target schools. They target large civilian population areas. That's the way battle does. Few people have the wherewithal to do what the United States does, what Israel does on a daily basis when it has to engage in warfare, which is to be sure of what it's targeting. So there's going to be very, very heavy casualties, I'm afraid. A key metric will be, of course, whether the regime decides that it's going to use chemical weapons again against the Trump administration's very direct warnings this time. But it's still going to be scorched earth, as you say, and I would expect a large amount of reprisals afterward, because this is just how Assad is thinking. Even his lieutenants in the military have been quoted as saying this publicly, that this is how they're going to be working.
Let's talk a little bit about what this means for not just Assad and his continued control in Syria, but also for the Iranians. Matt, there's been a lot of talk in recent years about Tehran's ambition to carve out a Shia crescent, as it's called, that would take its sphere of influence and sort of territorial access all the way to the Mediterranean. Is that likely to flow from this, or are Israeli objections to such a presence on a permanent basis, particularly in Syria, likely to prevent it?
Israel can do a lot to prevent it, and there are indications that the United States has, at least militarily, is helping out and supporting Israel in this endeavor. Quietly, the U.S., I've seen reports of moving some weaponry and men and material from Iraq into bases in northeast Turkey and in Al-Tanf, which is near the Iraqi, Syrian, Jordanian border, all of which is in a territory that is key to blocking the land bridge. But I think we also might be selling it short when we just talk about transportation logistical lines as being part of Iran's plan for the Shia Crescent. It is trying, it has been signing with Assad agreements to rebuild the electric grid. The reason for that is because they're literally trying to link Iran through Iraq to Syria, and it already controls Lebanon. So they're thinking in terms of electricity. They're thinking in much bigger, grander terms than just transportation routes. And so Israel, I think, will continue to act as it's always enforced its red lines when it comes to Iran. And we've seen, I believe, recently that with a few attacks over the weekend. And I think we'll see the United States hopefully maintaining its positions that it currently has, as quietly we've seen over the past few weeks.
Well, it is important to understand that there is a small but real presence of U.S. forces on the ground in this area. They've been threatened by the Russians. They've been threatened by, I believe, the Turks. So it's not a trivial matter that they're in an area that is becoming increasingly under the axis, if you will, of Syria, Iran, and the Russians' control. Speak about Russia's gains as you see them, Matt. Are they likely to be enduring as well?
Russia right now, since neither Iran or Russia have had the money to actually kick in toward reconstructing Syria at the end, they've made deals for bases and, again, like I mentioned, with Iran with the electric grid, while Russia has been given contracts for the hydrocarbon sector. But again, this is where the U.S. and its SDF allies are camped out in eastern Syria. So this is why Russia wants the U.S. out so badly, is they want to cash in on that sector and then create the illusion of Syrian stability so that they can funnel in reconstruction money that will go simply to Assad and be divvied up by Russia and Iran. This is a major pressure release valve from the sanctions that the U.S. has in place against Iran and against Russia separately. They would like to use Syria to escape that pressure.
Yeah, which I guess ties into this whole idea that Assad is now promoting, that Syria is open for business and will welcome investment from all parties to help reconstruct the country, and that essentially it's all over but the shouting, and even the refugees are welcome to come back. Walk us through the truth of all of that, if you would, Matt Brodsky.
Right. See, right after the July 16th Helsinki summit, there was a noticeable change in the rhetoric that came from Assad and Putin, and both reading from the exact same script, which is to say, we welcome home the refugees and we want to rebuild Syria. Assad concentrated, in fact, in a speech that was quoted throughout Russian media on saying, not just refugees in general, but specifically Syrian businessmen, which is to say what he wants is to lure back a lot of the Syrian businessmen who have fled and moved into the Gulf states because he needs to create a new class, a new business oligarchy to attract international investment, since his previous oligarchy has been under U.S. and EU sanctions. So Russia and Assad not only are trying to create the false image of stability in Syria, but then to also create this new business class that they can say, look, here's the new face we have. Your investment is safe with us. Now, Assad has no intention of rebuilding or reconstructing Syria. He could probably get by, I've seen realistic estimates of about $10 billion to rebuild just the areas in useful Syria along the eastern spine that he wants to rebuild. Meanwhile, the UN says the damage is at $388 billion, and that's not even the highest estimate.
Matt Brodsky, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Let's talk again soon, my friend. I hope we'll talk to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.